conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we once again do our annual special on Banned Books Week. For the hour today, we'll celebrate the Right to Read and Banned Books Week with Charles Brownstein, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Jackie Farmer from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. Abena Hutchful also joins the program for the Youth Free Expression Program and Kids Right to Read Project at the National Coalition Against Censorship. And finally, we'll talk with Deborah Caldwell Stone. She is at the American Library Association Office for Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation. Once again, for the hour today, we celebrate the Right to Read and Banned Books Week. Stay with us.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitual eyes, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Well, we're coming to the end of September, and listeners of the Project Censored Show know that that means we're likely going to be celebrating Banned Books Week. Banned Books Week, of course, goes back to the early 1980s, 1982. Every September, libraries, schools, bookstores, museums, and other locales around the world celebrate the right to read during Banned Books Week. At its heart, it's a celebration of the freedom to access ideas, a fundamental right that belongs to everyone and over which no person or small group of people should hold sway. Banned Books Week is a celebration of books, comics, plays, art, journalism, and much more. And I couldn't think of better guests to have on than I do today. Special thanks to the Banned Books Week Coalition and Betsy Gomez for helping set this up. And I am welcoming back to the program Charles Brownstein, who is the executive editor of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. He, however, also serves as the chair of the Banned Books Week Coalition. Also on the board of directors of Media Coalition, is past president of the Freedom to Read Foundation. Brownstein has served as the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund since 2002, and during his tenure, his organization has achieved numerous legal victories, been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court, and has become the leading source of education and advocacy for combating comics censorship in libraries and schools. Again, he's a prolific and sought-out lecturer on the history of comics, is widely published, and I want to thank Charles Brownstein once again this year for taking some time out to come on the Project Censored Show. Charles, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's good to hear from you, Mickey. Thanks so much for having us on this year.
It's my pleasure to do so, and of course, Project Censored is proud once again to be a contributor, along with the many sponsors of Banned Books Week, and of course, people can learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. But Charles Brownstein, start us out. You're wearing the chair hat. So what's Banned Books Week looking like this year coming up at the end of September?
Well, the coolest thing about being able to be the chair of the Banned Books Week Coalition is to see just how many institutions in American life are really committed to the values of free expression. And so we've got a tremendous range of organizations, some of whom you're going to be talking to later in this hour, including the American Booksellers Association, the American Library Association, the Association of University Presses, the Dramatists Legal Defense Fund, FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, the Freedom to Read Foundation, Index on Censorship, National Coalition Against Censorship, National Council of Teachers in English, and People for the American Way. Each one of those organizations is doing their own Banned Books Week programming. So we are able to reach broad swaths of American life, and in fact with Index international life, talking about the importance of fighting censorship. So this year's theme is Censorship Leaves Us in the Dark, Keep the Light On, and we're really illuminating how Banned Books Week is this great opportunity for communities like the ones that are listening to us talk right now can band together to talk about the importance of intellectual freedom. And if you think intellectual freedom isn't important, then you don't think that speaking truth to power is important. And if speaking truth to power isn't important, then I don't know what we're doing in the world right now.
Well, Charles, I couldn't agree more. And this is a truth emergency. This is a situation that really does require all of these wonderful sponsors and groups getting together to talk about this, because this has been going on since the early 80s, the American Library Association celebrating Banned Books Week. And for some who don't realize it, that this is the thing, they say, well, what do you mean Banned Books Week? We live in the United States. What do you mean there's censorship of books going on? So Charles Brownstein, enlighten us. Of course, the folks that listen to this show may be aware of it, but you know so much more about it and the kinds of books that have been challenged outside even of comics. So go ahead and give us a little overview.
Yeah, definitely. You know, every year in April, the American Library Association publishes a list of the top banned and challenged books that have popped up in the past year. And every year there's hundreds of incidents where individuals will attempt to restrict access or remove certain books from circulation. And increasingly in recent years, this is really vectoring on the locus of identity censorship. This whole idea that the very identity of the speaker or the very identity of the audience for an intended body of work is enough to have it removed from the public square, from the conversations that are happening in libraries and in schools and in institutions all over the world. And so in the last year, CBLDF has been really intricately involved, as have our partners on the Banned Books Week Coalition, in combating this kind of identity censorship. We can get a little bit more into the granular details of the CBLDF cases in a little bit, but broadly speaking, there's always going to be folks out there that think they know better than you about what you should have the right to access or think about, or folks that believe that they know better than some other set of parents about how the kids in their community should be raised. And the truth of the matter is that every individual has the right to make up their own minds about their own minds. That's what the First Amendment's all about. And that's what Banned Books Week is about. It's saying respect the intelligence of yourself, respect the intelligence of your neighbors, respect the intentions of the Constitution, and honor that the First Amendment gives us the right to make up our own minds about any of a variety of ideas. And so Banned Books Week is an opportunity for not just these sponsor groups that, you know, I'm proud to be a part of putting on our own events, but maybe the coolest thing about it is that Banned Books Week has the conditions of a movement. It has the conditions of individual communities getting together and putting their own events on, whether that's local readouts, whether that is author talks, whether that is story time, whether that is exhibits of books that have been banned or challenged, or any number of creative ideas. And in fact, I'd encourage your listeners to go check out BannedBooksWeek.org, where the coalition resources are up and you can find events near you. And if you've got an event that's not on there, you can list it for free to get more people involved. Because that's how we're going to get out of this darkness that we're in, is for more and more people to keep the light on and keep the light of intellectual freedom on by coming together and illuminating each other with mutual dignity and respect about their rights to make up their own minds about their own minds.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Charles Brownstein, the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and you can learn more at cbldf.org. You can also learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. Charles Brownstein, I'm, of course, also doing our small part here with Project Censored, having this annual show on Banned Books Week. I'll be actually doing a Constitution Day talk at my college, focusing on Banned Books Week this year. And also, I have spoken to my kids' schools, elementary and middle schools. And so I want to remind people that while the sponsors, contributors, and you and so many folks that do so many great things across the country and the ALA to get this going on, I really, really appreciate how it's more and more a grassroots effort. There's invitations for everybody to be spreading the word about so many of these important principles that you were just telling us about. Banned Books Week this year starts September 22nd, runs to the 29th. So, Charles Brownstein, could you tell us about a couple of these more specific and recent cases about identity censorship or about political identification? I know you had a couple of cases in Texas and New Jersey in particular.
We're keeping watch on a really disturbing case in Leander, Texas, involving a city council that has overruled a local library in the invitation of the author of a young adult graphic novel. It was called Lumberjanes, The Infernal Compass. The graphic novelist is the author Lila Sturges, and 2 hours before Lila was to give her talk about her YA graphic novel to the kids in Leander, she got a call saying that this event has been abruptly canceled, don't come. And when we drilled into it, it was found that this was a discriminatory disinvitation that appears to be from the basis of the fact that Lila is transgender. And, wow, you know, no other speakers that were invited to the library suffered this indignity. And, you know, it's just wrong. So she found herself censored just for who she is, not the content of her work, not the content of her political activities. And it's wrong. So CBLDF led a coalition effort that we're still working on, urging the city of Leander to reinstate her event, which they failed to do. In fact, while we did find an advocate in Councilwoman Christine Sederquist, who has been a vocal supporter of Lila and more inclusive library policies, the city council instead voted not just to not address the ban of Lila, but also to restrict access to the community members to use library meeting rooms. So it's a really terrible situation that we continue to keep watch on, and we hope that saner heads can prevail and that these policy decisions can be reversed. But it's a really extreme example of something that's happening all over the country, which is people finding themselves being discriminated against because of who they are. And I'm sure later in this episode you'll talk to other folks about other areas where this is happening. One of the key flashpoints is Drag Queen Story Hour, where there are folks that object to the presence of fantastically dressed human beings reading stories about fables and fairy tales to young kids, and saying, you know, that these fantastically dressed human beings are somehow putting a negative agenda into these kids' heads, which is just complete nonsense. But this is a growing trend. It's a trend that CBLDF is active in opposing, and it's a trend that our partners, including the National Coalition Against Censorship, the ALA, and others, are speaking out against and in favor of the fact that every human being has the right to be heard. So it's a terrible set of circumstances. And then the New Jersey case that you brought up, this involves the ongoing saga of the book Fun Home by Alison Bechdel, which is one of the quintessential graphic memoirs of the 21st century. And this is frequently plagued with challenges, again, just on the basis of the book addressing gay themes, LGBTQ plus themes. And there was a lawsuit that we weren't involved in Watchung Hills, New Jersey, that grew out of a case we were involved in, where a small group of parents challenged the presence of an optional reading assignment for seniors in high school to read this book. We spoke out against the attempts to ban the book in that case, and that was successful. And then about a year later, a group of parents brought a lawsuit against the school district saying that this was going to be a violation of the obscenity law to assign this literary graphic novel that has won all of the accolades a graphic novel of this kind could win, been adapted to a successful Broadway play. And the school district was forced to defend itself. And fortunately, the case was dismissed with prejudice by the judge, so it can't be brought back. But we're seeing more and more and more of these kinds of cases emerging where it's not even about what's being said. It's about who's being spoken to or who is speaking. And that's just an un-American idea.
It's not even getting into the content. There are so many stereotypes and assumptions and projections going on in these kinds of cases, not to mention that it clearly flies in the face of everything that the First Amendment stands for. And again, to see these kind of things happening where there's censorship taking place in schools, particularly in libraries, bookstores, community halls, and it's just anathema to what we stand for as a free society. And again, that's why I think it's so important you have so many wonderful sponsors, contributors, and people doing this. The Office of Intellectual Freedom at the American Library Association, also a key player here. Charles, there's a couple of other things I think that are on your mind. You mentioned a comic censorship going on in Idaho, and you had a workshop and something coming up that you might be able to invite people to.
Yeah, definitely. If folks check out cbldf.org, cbldf.org, we have a lot of free resources, including webinars that folks can participate in to help create more awareness and better tools for managing difficult situations. coming up at the end of this month, we've got a webinar on how to fight identity censorship. We're going to have Lila Sturges, the author of Lumberjanes, the Infernal Compass, who was the target of this terrible censorship in Texas, and John Spears, the chief librarian of the Pikes Peak Library District in Colorado Springs, where there was a big protest about Drag Queen Story Hour. And they're going to be talking about their experiences with an eye to informing the participants in this webinar about how they can fight this kind of censorship when it happens in their communities, and ultimately how we can create the conditions of education and awareness so that we can help prevent this kind of censorship from happening in the first place. So that's going to be during Banned Books Week, Friday, September 27th. You can register now for free at cbldf.org. And there you'll also get a sense of some of the other cases that CBLDF is working on a regular basis. The case in Idaho you mentioned involves a extremely weird high school ban of the Walking Dead comic book series, which was in the high school library, and there was a challenge brought to that book because of the violent content within it, and ultimately a committee went through the proper processes and procedures. The committee voted to retain the book, but the superintendent decided to override that committee and not just remove the book from this rural library, but also is attempting to create a bifurcated library card system to prohibit students from using interlibrary loan to get their hands on copies of this graphic novel series, which is, of course, the basis of a wildly popular set of television shows and video games, etc. But the thing that's really disturbing about all of this is that if they actually bothered to read the book, book is all about government and good government, and how government is the highest form of common consent. Rule of law is the highest form of common consent. So this is a series that is using the popular vernacular to talk about the core values of what it is to be an American and to be engaged in the rule of law. So just one of many, many examples of the kinds of censorship that we're dealing with on a regular basis.
Charles Brownstein, that is, again, another riveting story. Censorship is very real, and we've dedicated a pretty significant part of our professional and personal lives to fighting it at every level. But again, I don't think people necessarily suspect it so often, and so it's always very heartening to see people in these local communities pushing back against this with the help of a lot of the people involved in Banned Books Week to make these really big deals. The right to read, the right to think, the right to express oneself. I mean, they're really at the core of what it means to be an American constitutionally.
I think you make a really great point that all of this work requires every single one of us. Banned Books Week, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Project Censored, American Library Association, all of these organizations are at their heart collections of people that share common values and a bond of common respect for each other's right to make up their own minds. And so when we talk about censorship in libraries and we talk about censorship in schools, you know, it's really not the individuals that are trying to serve their community by bringing books into them that are creating these problems. These are really well-meaning folks that are just trying to do right by everybody in their community. And there's a lot of unsung heroes in this environment that Banned Books Week is a great opportunity to sing the praises of. So cheers to all of the great teachers, librarians, parents, and activists out there that are standing up for this work, because organizations like the one that I work for wouldn't exist without them, and ultimately the society that we all strive to live in and improve wouldn't exist without people of good heart doing this important work. So Banned Books Week is a big chance for us all to celebrate each other in doing that.
The other group that I know that you're including in all of that, of course, often on the front lines are the students themselves. Sometimes we don't always recognize that it's the students that are the ones that are raising their voices first, and they're the ones that are getting other people involved and calling attention to the fact that they're not being allowed to see something, especially if you're going through the middle school years into high school years. I mean, that's the trigger. As soon as they're told they're not allowed to do something, they're all about it. So kudos to all the students that have stood up to do those things. So Charles Brownstein, you are at cbldf.org. You're the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. You've been doing that since 2002. Additionally, you also are the chair of Banned Books Week Coalition. You're on the board of Directors of Media Coalition and past president of the Freedom to Read Foundation. So again, you're a man wearing many hats, Charles Bronstein, and our hat goes off to you here at Project Censored.
Thanks so much for having me today, Mickey.
Thanks, Charles, and thanks for all your great work. Again, you can go to bannedbooksweek.org or cbldf.org. Charles Bronstein, we'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. After this brief musical break, we're going to come back and talk with our next guest from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, otherwise known as FIRE. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are highlighting Banned Books Week. We're talking to members of the Banned Books Week Coalition, sponsors, contributors, and other people that support the right to read. And today, I would like to welcome another representative from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, and that is Jackie Farmer. She is Outreach Officer at Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. Jackie Farmer, thank you for joining the program today to talk about Banned Books Week.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, Jackie, just to remind our listeners, 20-some years ago, a small nonprofit in Philadelphia opened its doors to answer calls for help from students and professors facing violations of their individual rights. You can learn more, of course, about the Foundation for Individual Rights at the website, thefire.org. And 20 years later, FIRE is the leading authority on campus civil liberties, having helped millions defend and enjoy their rights. And so this is the organization you work for. So tell us about how you're connected with Banned Books Week this year and its connection to academic freedom, Jackie Farmer.
This is actually our first year with the Banned Books Week Coalition. We're super excited to be part of this. We're excited to be helping to educate the public about the importance of free speech and the harm that censorship can do. Books are always the first way people learn about different cultures and life experiences. And, you know, I never went to the library to learn about what I already knew. I always went to learn about what I don't know. And especially where FIRE is concerned, when students reach college and are faced with folks from all different walks of life with different opinions and experiences, it can be a really difficult time to adapt to that new environment, especially in regards to a lot of the children's books and the YA books that are often on the American Library Association's list of most banned or challenged books. It's great to just have that opportunity and those books accessible when you're younger to be able to learn about different ideas and lives at that important point in your life before you even hit the college campus and are faced with all of these different folks that you might not have had in your hometown environment.
Sheltering people from controversial books can have a negative impact on students when they reach college or are faced with folks from all walks of life with different opinions. And that's what, you know, we were talking a little bit before you came on air. So can you talk a little bit more specifically about that, or tying it into Banned Books Week, or any particular cases that you're involved in or that you might be working with that give an example like this?
Yeah. So, I, you know, from this year's list, you have The Hate U Give on the ALA's list of most banned and challenged books, and the book George, and last year there was The Kite Runner. And, you know, these books depict experiences that many readers don't have the privilege to learn about in their everyday lives. So making sure that people have access to these books is really important to prime them for the college environment if they choose to read them. As for FIRE cases related to banned books, we actually have one great roundup blog about this. My personal favorite is probably not the right word to use, but one of the cases I always go back to is the Crafton Hills case from 2015, where a student and her parents were briefly successful in pressuring a college to add trigger warnings to an English course syllabus on graphic novels. They had objections to the book Persepolis, Fun Home, Why the Last Man, and Sandman, clearly showing they did not know much about graphic novels. But it was one of those interesting cases because it was a case of rhetoric of trigger warnings, and that's normally used on the left, used on the side of more people with conservative values to try to limit the academic freedom of the professor. And what we argued when we wrote this to the college was that making professors go through any sort of process where they have to put these warnings on their syllabus would really have a chilling effect, because that makes them stop to think about what kind of controversies they're bringing, about what they're choosing to teach. And to their credit, Crafton Hills immediately reversed their decision, which was really great. And it was a great coalition of folks that helped us on that letter.
That's certainly something that FIRE does, Foundation for Individuals' Rights in Education, working with other groups and getting coalitions of people involved in supporting academic freedom. And again, the thing that's interesting about it, and again, I know that there's people out there listening that are going to write me angry emails telling me, don't you know that there's right-wing money behind the FIRE and this kind of business? And I do know all that. But what I also know is that I know a lot of the people that work at the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. Mm-hmm. I've seen the track record of the things that FIRE has done. I know people personally in my life as colleagues that when I wrote an email to Greg Lukianoff, within a week, they were on the case of helping people that I knew that were having a rough time at their institutions. And it didn't matter if they were right or left. What matters was violating academic freedom is a matter of right and wrong. And it's simply wrong to do that, no matter what side of the spectrum people are on. And that's, again, something else that I admire about the FIRE, and I see it fitting in quite well with the National Coalition Against Censorship and Banned Books Week in general, that it's a general idea that you have a right to information, a right to be taught, and a right to teach these things without interference. So, Jackie Farmer, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what you do at FIRE?
I primarily work in our First Amendment Library, which is a portion of our website. The main portion of that is a database of First Amendment-related cases from the Supreme Court and some summary data about them. And one of our big efforts that we're really pushing is to use this portion of our site to increase the awareness about the history of the First Amendment and free speech controversies around the U.S. That's the kind of work we're trying to work towards, is to preserve this history and to get that information out there.
As an historian by day, one of the other hats I wear, I couldn't agree more with that. And the First Amendment Library is something that you have on your site at thefire.org. You can click into it, and it's actually a searchable database. And for listeners, there's a freedom of speech and expression section, assembly and petition, specific cases on campus, also the free exercise clause. And of course, I notice a lot of what FIRE does is government censorship, but there's also a big problem of corporate censorship and other types of special interest group censorship. But I know FIRE focuses mainly on government. So could you tell us a particular thing that you might be working on that you're pretty excited about? I know the library, the searchable library and the citations is really good, but just wanted to give you another opportunity to tell our listeners more about what you're doing. And maybe even, you know, I know you do student outreach events, and you do events to try to get young people involved in protecting the First Amendment.
We have some regional conferences for students. I don't have them on hand, but sometimes we host events regionally for our student network. I believe our next one's going to be on censorship of student press. So if anybody knows any student journalists out there, or even budding student journalists, definitely watch our site for updates on that. We have our student network that you can join. And you're right, we focus mostly on government censorship, but part of the First Amendment Library is also tracking general free speech controversies. And, you know, if you're interested in that realm, one of the things I direct people to go look at is our timelines on the library. And we have one that's the history of film censorship. So that's a little bit more in that private realm, chronicling those controversies. So we know why we advocate for free speech. And that's written by the author of Freedom of the Screen, Legal Challenges to State Film Censorship.
And it's really good to see that the FIRE has branched out a lot, and you're covering a lot of different areas, and you have a lot of resources that are available to the public, and the First Amendment Library just being one of the parts of what the Foundation for Individual Rights is all about and is doing. So, Jackie Farmer, before we move on to the next member of the Banned Books Week Coalition, Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Pick up a banned book. Read something you never thought you'd read and expand your mind.
Jackie Farmer, thanks so much for what you're doing at the fire. Give our best to Greg and the team there, and we will be back in touch, and we'll get more updates from you coming up here by the end of the year.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today's program is our annual Banned Books Week show. And when we come back from this musical break, we will be rejoined by Abena Hutchful, who manages the Youth Free Expression Program and Kids' Right to Read Project with the National Coalition Against Censorship, a big partner in Banned Books Week. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. You're tuned to Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, and today's program is about Banned Books Week. Banned Books Week is at the end of September, September 22nd to 28th. I believe I said the 29th earlier and misspoke, but September 22nd to 28th, 2019. Banned Books Week should be every week, where we're celebrating the right to read and celebrating the idea that we have free speech, free expression, academic freedom, etc. But Banned Books Week is coming up here, September 22nd. And for this segment of the program, we are joined once again by Abena Hutchful. She manages the Youth Free Expression Program and Kids' Right to Read Project with the National Coalition Against Censorship, of which Project Censored is a member, and we're all, of course, members of the Banned Books Week Coalition. So, Abena Hutchful, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you, Mickey.
It's an honor to have you back, and thank you so much for the important work that you do fighting for free expression, especially with the Youth Free Expression Program and the Kids' Right to Read Project. So could you please remind our listeners what exactly it is you do over at NCAC?
Ours is the only national project or initiative dedicated to fighting book censorship in schools and also in public libraries. What that means is that we work very closely with teachers. The National Council for Teachers of English is a very close partner of ours, and librarians, ALA is a close partner of ours, to track book challenges, note also the reasons for the book challenges so we can observe the trends that what this tells us about, you know, our communities and what kind of material we're targeting. And then also make sure the decisions made on whether or not to keep a book and to allow students access to a book are viewpoint neutral. So we're not removing material on the basis of ideology, that we're not censoring particular viewpoints, which of course would violate the First Amendment. And our work with the Kids' Right to Read Project deals primarily with books, but also Youth Free Expression deals with a lot of access to information, not just the written word. We work closely with other partners, education partners, to make sure the kids have access to art, the opportunities to express their views. And we have been working really closely with teachers to also incorporate some of these lessons in the classroom as well about the dangers of censorship and the importance of protecting and respecting diverse viewpoints.
Well, that's a mouthful for sure. And whenever we talk about Banned Books Week, which has been around since the early 80s with the ALA, people say, well, what's that about? What do you mean you ban books? Or who's banning books in the United States? What do you mean that there's people banning books and there's book censorship going on? Mm-hmm. And again, we can go on all day. In fact, people like us go on all year talking about censorship and fighting it in its many guises. So what are some examples of the things that you're doing with the Youth Free Expression Program and also the Kids' Right to Read Project?
I think our biggest role is to remind people that book censorship is still happening. By documenting these incidents and also by serving as a record and a reflection of society, and what kinds of material we're targeting, we're reminding people that by depriving young people of access to diverse perspectives, and when we see what kinds of perspectives we're targeting here, we are effectively silencing or erasing the people who hold those views. And as you can see from, you know, ALA's list of banned books this year, and also as we've been seeing from our cases, the majority of these targets for censorship, of material that's targeted for censorship, is about or by LGBTQ people, people of color. These are the underrepresented of our communities, right? Those groups that are most heavily stigmatized, that are marginalized and suppressed. And the problem with banning or censoring material based on ideology and subjective views is that it depends on who has the power, right? Depending on who has the power, it can always be used against you and your group. So we've been seeing that there's, like I said, majority of the material that's challenged or was challenged this past year pertain to LGBTQ experiences. Either they were written by or about LGBTQ characters. And also this pertains to programming as well. This summer, we saw almost every other week there was a headline story about Drag Queen Story Hour protests and libraries being forced to cancel reading events for kids, having nothing to do with the books that are being read in some cases. But we're seeing increasingly that book censorship is not just about the books, it's also about the people whose voices they're trying to silence. And so in the case of Drag Queen Story Hour programs and libraries, a lot of the hostility and real harm to safety came from censors, protesters who were trying to silence and erase the views of LGBTQ readers, authors.
I want to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We're talking about Banned Books Week, and I'm now talking with Abena Hutchful. She manages the Youth Free Expression Program and Kids' Right to Read Project with the National Coalition Against Censorship. And I urge you to go to their website, ncac.org, and under resources, you can find out a lot of different things that are going on and ways that you can get involved. And under What We Do, which is the first tab, you can access the Youth Free Expression Program, Kids' Right to Read Project, as well as the other things that NCAC does. But Abena, you were just saying a moment ago, please continue.
I was saying in Tennessee recently, an author of YA literature, Julia Watts, who's an acclaimed writer. She's won the Lambda Literary Award for one of her novels back in 2001. And now she's bestselling author of Quiver, which is a book about, ironically, two young girls from different ends of the political ideological spectrum. Their families have very different political beliefs, and they form a friendship, and it's about overcoming their differences and really seeing the humanity in one another. And ironically, she was disinvited from a literary festival in Tennessee because she's an LGBTQ author who writes fiction that features LGBTQ perspectives, but also because she has written for adult audiences before. So it had nothing to do with the book itself that she's promoting or what the messages in the story. This becomes really quickly and insidiously about erasing people's voices, about erasing entire groups of people. I think that this year, perhaps more than any other year that I've worked at NCAC, I've been seeing more and more examples of that. And it's become chillingly clear that as much as we think that book censorship is not a thing anymore, is not a big threat anymore, as much as we've normalized it and become desensitized to it, it is a very real threat and a sign that there's something wrong in our society. And I think it's important for us to look at book challenges or protests or requests to ban access to certain types of literature or any literature as a dangerous sign of where society is.
Abena Hutchful, it's also important to emphasize that in some of these cases that you're describing and that we had on a couple of guests on earlier describing, it's not even the book that was being protested. It was the identity of the speaker or the author, which I'm not sure if we can put a tag on it that makes it better or worse, although it does appear to be something that's broadening in terms of censorship. You just mentioned that the types of censorship that you're seeing are broadening and thus increasing.
I think it is something that may not be getting worse, but we are seeing more examples of it because also the way in which it's happening. We're seeing a lot of calls for censorship using social media as a tool, and we also see the response to attempts to censor on social media, I think. And so we're perhaps more impressed by that. Recently in Vermont, also over the summer around Pride Month, there's this conservative Facebook personality known as Activist Mommy, who has over 700,000 followers. And she called for her followers to protest Drag Queen Story Hour. And there was a Drag Queen Story Hour event in Vermont, in Montpelier, Vermont. All these protesters appeared at the library and started calling into the library to cancel the event. And fortunately, people who care about defending free expression, who recognize the dangers of censorship and who want to protect kids' access to diverse perspectives and viewpoints, organize a counter-protest also over social media, calling people to the library to show support for the event. And also, fortunately, the library continued to stick by the organizers and hold the event. So ultimately, the protest was not successful. But I think we're seeing, as more and more people gain access to social media platforms and recognize the power of voice, we're seeing, I think, censorship more up close than maybe in the past. But we also see more opportunities to resist it, which is great.
Very well said. That seems like what is going on, right? But also the good sign there is there's also more awareness that comes out of this, more teachable moments, right? That come out of this. Earlier, we were talking about Lila Sturgis in Texas, and unfortunately, the library wasn't able to protect the rights there. Not yet. I mean, that's still an ongoing thing Charles Bronstein was talking about. Is there something else that you want to add about that case? Because I know that's something that you were following, too.
That case actually illustrates another trend that I've noticed in my time with the program, which is increasing, I don't know if it's lack of familiarity with or respect for the First Amendment on the part of legislators, but increasing pressure on libraries from legislators. So in Lila Sturgis' case is an egregious and shocking one. What happened after her event was canceled was that the city council in Leander changed their meeting room policies, first of all, to restrict access to outside groups in response to protests against the Sturgis talk, but also against Drag Queen Story Hour events that were scheduled to be held and had been canceled. And then the city council also pressured the library into changing these policies and becoming more restrictive and imposed a background check requirement on speakers that would be invited that aren't on an approved list.
But it's okay for the Eagle Scouts or Daughters of the American Revolution to be there. And there's plenty of groups that might think that there's some kind of controversy involved with those groups. But we're talking about the public square, the library, you know, public education and information, where all groups should be able to come and express and have their say. And to have these people censored because of how they identify is absolutely egregious.
And even the types of offenses that will be screened part of this background check deny certain communities access, communities that are heavily policed, that are overly incarcerated. I think it's really shocking how much public officials have disregarded the First Amendment in the interest of avoiding controversy and avoiding those teachable moments. Another example is in Ohio. There were two libraries that had planned to have Drag Queen Story Hour events over Pride. They also had other Pride events planned. And in response to a lot of protests, they canceled. And before the second one canceled, the House Speaker wrote a letter to the library board calling their programming stunningly bizarre breach of the taxpayer trust. And libraries are dependent on these groups for funding. They're dependent on government, on politicians' support. And I think it's another trend that is clear from this past summer, actually, and this whole year, the kinds of challenges that there have been against books.
Abena Hutchful, is there anything here in the last minute or so we have in the segment? Maybe you can share ways to be contacted, share the websites again, and one of the good things about Banned Books Week and bannedbooksweek.org, the major website for all the coalition there, is that there's a lot of different ways for people to get involved. So maybe there's some ways that you can suggest.
We've actually, together with Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and ALA, started a campaign to shed light on LGBTQ censorship in schools. It's called Uncensored Pride. So I would encourage everyone to check it out. We include resources and different ways that you can defend LGBTQ expression and voices in your community. I think also the way that people have shown up for other members of their community when they're being targeted for censorship, organizing counter protests, supporting petitions, in the case of Leander, Texas, there was a church that actually opened their doors for the Drag Queen Story Hour event that was canceled. Supporting censored and silenced views, supporting the people whose identities and humanity is being targeted and erased, I think is a very important way to support as National Coalition Against Censorship. And I would encourage everyone to check out our website, the Uncensored Pride Campaign, and also just buy a banned book for someone you love.
Absolutely. Benna Hutchful, you manage the Youth Free Expression Program and Kids Right to Read Project for the National Coalition Against Censorship, important part of Banned Books Week Coalition as well. You can learn more at ncac.org. Abena, thank you again for joining us for our annual program, and we'll probably have you back because that means censorship will still be an issue and a problem. But I'm just very grateful that there are so many wonderful allies and people like you, Abena, and Jackie and Charles and so many others that are out there on the front lines with the students, with people in marginalized communities that are fighting censorship every day. So thank you so much for what you do.
Likewise. Thank you.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today's program focuses on Banned Books Week, which is September 22nd to 28th. Learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. After this musical break, we will conclude our conversation about Banned Books Week, and we'll be joined by Deborah Caldwell Stone. She is the interim director at the ALA, the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today, we have been celebrating the upcoming Banned Books Week, and we've had some stellar guests on, and we have another fabulous guest to share wisdom with you. We have Deborah Caldwell Stone, who's the interim director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation. Again, very, very significant and important part of the American Library Association. Also, of course, ALA goes back to the roots of Banned Books Week and a big part of Banned Books Week. So, Deborah Caldwell Stone, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks for having me on, Mickey.
So, one of the things we didn't cover yet in this whole hour, even though we've discussed many examples of book censorship and talked about some of the things that are being censored, particularly identity censorship, one of the things that I know some listeners are wondering is, what are some other books that are actually being censored? Or more accurately, what are the top most challenged books of the last year? And maybe you can differentiate that and maybe explain to our listeners what it means to challenge a book and what the ALA Office of Intellectual Freedom does in terms of fighting censorship.
One of the things that we do in our role in defending the freedom to read in libraries is to actually keep track of censorship attempts, both in libraries and in schools. And so we solicit censorship reports, challenge reports from across the country. We define a challenge as any request to remove a book or library resource from the library itself or from the classroom. A book is considered banned when it is actually removed from the library or the classroom. And we've kind of expanded our reporting to not only cover books, but attempts to censor any kind of free expression in the library, such as times when an author is disinvited from speaking at a library or when there's an attempt to shut down a particular program, as what's happened with Drag Queen Story Times this year. But at any rate, we keep this database going of censorship attempts and sometimes successful censorship in schools and libraries. Last year, we received reports of 347 challenges to library, school, and university materials. for 2018. And overall in 2018, 483 books were targeted for removal by would-be censors. And we analyzed that data and we identify the most frequently challenged books. And last year's number one most frequently challenged book was George by Alex Gino, which was challenged primarily because it depicts a transgender character. And that became kind of a theme for the top 11 because of the top 11, seven of them dealt with themes dealing with transgender characters or LGBTQ characters or defending civil liberties for LGBTQ people.
Could you repeat the number again of the challenges that you've seen in the last year?
347 challenges to library, school, and university materials.
And that's only what's reported?
That's only what's reported. And the thing to remember is we don't hear about every censorship attempt in schools and libraries. We actually were able to get a measure of what we don't hear about through a number of studies done by university communities. And particularly the University of Missouri, one of their journalism classes did a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act project, and they sent requests for public records to every school district and public library in the state asking for reports about challenges to library materials or requests to remove books from the classroom. And when we compared our data to the data collected by this group of students, we found that we'd only heard about 8% of the challenges reported to the University of Missouri group through the Freedom of Information Act requests. So we are guessing that in any given year, we only hear about 10 to 25% of the challenges reported to us. So we know that what we're getting in our database is a snapshot of censorship attempts in our schools and libraries across the country. But it's good enough numbers that we can really identify trends like last year's trend of bringing challenges to materials that deal with LGBTQ themes or characters, which were real primary targets. In fact, we identified a top 11 books. And one of the reasons we didn't have a top 10 is that there was a tie for number 10 on our list. And it was two books, Two Boys Kissing by David Levithan and In This Day in June, which is a nonfiction chapter book for young people about gay pride parades in June. And they had been removed from the library by a religious activist and burned in protest of that library's celebration of Pride Month.
Deborah, that's what I wanted to say. I was just reading the ALA.org site, and it said challenged and burned.
Absolutely. This activist was so opposed to the idea of any books reflecting LGBTQ lifestyles in the library or having them available for young people. It was his idea that he would burn the books to prevent them from ever being inside the library again. He was actually arrested and charged with the destruction of public property and vandalism. And what's a great thing to know is that in response to the book burning, which he did via Facebook Live, he broadcast it to the world, he was arrested and convicted for that act of vandalism and was given some jail time. However, in response, the public began donating copies of the books and money to the library so that they were able to replace all the books and add many more books dealing with LGBTQ themes to the library's collection.
Well, censorship backfires, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think that when there is a challenge to a book, we often find that it actually raises interest in the book and gets it greater distribution than it would have otherwise gotten had it not been for the challenge to the book.
Deborah Caldwell Stone, we only have a minute or two remaining in our final segment today, but again, it's great to have you on from the ALA, particularly the important work that you do there at the Office for Intellectual Freedom, the Freedom to Read Foundation. There's some repeat offenders here. Sherman Alexie's back on the list. Dav Pilkey's back on the list.
Yes.
So some of these books are the same over and over. And some of them aren't recent books. Some of them in the past have been going way back. People are still trying to ban Mark Twain.
Absolutely. We still see challenges to Huckleberry Finn. And every so often, the challenges rise to the point where Mark Twain is back on our top 10 list. But this year's list was particularly interesting because we actually had our first parody book. Our number two most challenged book was A Day in the Life of Marlon Brando, which was the book developed by writers at Stephen Colbert's show, Late Show, as a parody of a book written about the bunny rabbit at the vice president's house. Other themes that emerged was challenges to books like The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which was challenged on the grounds that it promoted anti-cop feelings when, in fact, it's such a deeply felt, wonderful book about Black Lives Matter and the violence suffered by the Black community.
Such an important book that should be read by so many people outside of that community in particular that often don't get a real clear understanding and sometimes don't seem to make an opportunity to learn about these very important perspectives that other people are trying to share. All the more reason that the work you do as interim director there at the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom, the Freedom to Read Foundation, is ever more important. So we are about done with the segment, Deborah Caldwell Stone, but could you share with us any other information or website information or other ways that our listeners can learn more about the important work of the ALA OIF or any other thing you'd like to share?
Our theme this year, and I'm sure you know this already, is that censorship leaves us in the dark, and we encourage everyone to keep the light on. And you can learn more about ALA's Banned Books Week effort and our ongoing all-year-round effort to protect the freedom to read at ala.org/bbooks.
Deborah Caldwell Stone, thank you so much for the important work you do and being a big part of the Banned Books Week Coalition and Banned Books Week every year, the last week of September. So thank you so much for joining us on the Project Censored show, and we'll hopefully get more updates from you and maybe do more than just our annual show on Banned Books Week. We talk about censorship in media and the press quite a bit on the program, but especially last couple of years, been paying way more attention to what's happening with banned books, and there's so many overlapping themes across all platforms and forms of media, including social media. So would really like to try to have you back on and some other people from ALA back on in the near future.
Thanks for having me on.
I just really appreciate what you do, and I guarantee we will be inviting you back on.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
You've been listening to the Project Censored show, established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff, that's me. I'm the executive producer and host of the program. Our co-host is Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. The Project Censored show airs on roughly 50 stations around the United States from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archive programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored show on your phone's podcast application. Please feel free to share your feedback about our work at projectcensored.org. And last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief. Combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got